Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS, 90.3 FM in Davis. I'd like to take a moment to thank all of you who helped us out last week during the KDVS fundraiser. Last week, KDVS raised tens of thousands of dollars from you, our listeners and supporters. On this particular show, we received pledges not only from our local fans, but from someone driving across Oklahoma, from a dentist in Chicago, and then from a former DJ and former candidate for city council here in the city of Davis. Rob Roy contacted us all the way from South Korea to give a generous pledge to your campus and community radio station. The fundraiser page is still up, so if you missed it, if you were out of town last week, if you didn't feel compelled to help out, you still can. Head over to kdvs.fundraiser.ucdavis.edu. Spring Warren is here, ladies and gentlemen. She's back. You might remember when she was here in 2007 for her novel Turpentine, that was published by Grove Atlantic Press. Her second book, Quarter Acre Farm, How I Kept the Patio, Lost the Lawn, and Fed My Family for a Year, is out now from Seal Press this very spring. She'll be reading from Quarter Acre Farm this coming Friday, April 29th, at the Avid Reader in Davis, which is 617 2nd Street. And then again on Sunday at the Avid Reader in Sacramento, alongside the illustrator of Quarter Acre Farm, Jesse Pruitt, who will be making prints at the actual event. She has a bunch of other appearances. I'm going to make her share what some of those are. But for right now, let's welcome back Spring Warren to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Hi, Spring.
Hello, Andy. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, great to have you back. And what an interesting and very different project this is from the project that brought you to us last time. And that was your novel of the Great American West, Turpentine.
It is slightly different, yes.
Did you know, as you were thinking about Turpentine and the aftermath, that you said, I want to go into a radically different direction. I want to go nonfiction. I want to go gardening. I want to become Davis's Henry David Thoreau with my my lines of beans here and be self-sustaining, self-reliant, as Thoreau would want us all to be. Did you know immediately after the aftermath of Turpentine that that was the direction you were going to go?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yes.
Not at all. In fact, I didn't think that the Quarter Acre Farm was going to be a book at all. And it was during some research that I had started for my next novel that was, and hopefully will be, when I finish this up and get back to it, but will be set in North Dakota.
Uh-huh.
It was on a trip we took to North Dakota to do that research where the idea occurred to me, and that was during the horrible season of salmonella and tomatoes, or perhaps peppers, or perhaps lettuce, or perhaps they couldn't figure out what it was.
Right.
And so it was a curious time to be going across country. You couldn't get very many vegetables in any diners anywhere. And then we were also in the throes of paying huge amounts of money for gas, which seems like a lot less money now.
Right.
But also we were driving through a lot of corporate farming landscapes where they were growing who knows what and who knows what way, spraying who knows what on them. And more and more as we were driving along, and I wasn't driving, I was in the passenger seat, so I was just wool gathering and thinking, you know, this is terrible. This is terrible where we are, you know, eating-wise. And I'd always been sort of a hobbyist gardener. And so I came up with the idea. I thought, I bet I could grow my own food. I bet I could really, you know, in our little yard, I bet I could grow a lot. And the more I thought of it, the more I thought, what a great idea. And when I fully convinced myself it was doable and a great idea, I told my youngest son and my husband, who were in the car with me, this is what I was going to do. And they were not excited at all.
They weren't supportive of this scheme?
No. My youngest son said, well, you know, it's already well into the summer and you really haven't done any planning. Maybe you should put it off a while and try it later, which I kind of figured he meant after I'd left for college.
Right.
And my husband, he just pretty much said, you can't do that. You'd starve. That's crazy. Which pretty much meant, you can't do that. I might starve. It's crazy.
Right.
And so they were very much against it. And I got kind of stubborn and said, fine, I'll do it myself. I will grow all my own food. I will show you it can be done. And that's what I ended up doing.
So were they instantly more supportive when they knew that you'd be eating all the produce that that you'd make in your quarter acre farm?
No, my son actually was right. I hadn't planned. And so the first month of the project was known as the month of zucchini. And I ate zucchini day in and day out while I waited for the rest of the plants that I had grown to catch up and start producing. And they pretty much knew that they had pegged it right, you know, that boy, they're glad that they hadn't, you know, jumped
right
in on this with me. But once things started going and it became evident this was going to work out and I was learning new ways to cook, and of course the food tasted so much better with fresh produce, that by the end of the year, in fact, by halfway through the year, they were eating right along with me.
That's great. Well, if you're just joining us, The Quarter Acre Farm is the name of the book that we're talking about. I have its author, Spring Warren, here in the studios of KDBS. She is a Davisite, and she's learned probably a lot more about Davis, especially Davis soil, than you knew before you started this project, and what can grow in Davis soil. Now, you mentioned zucchini, which is a fast starter, and thank goodness so that you could eat in the late summer, early fall. But can you give folks at home a sense of the variety of produce as well as protein sources that you are working on in your quarter acre farm here in the city of Davis?
Well, it's pretty much, you know, we have an ideal climate here in Davis. We've got a Mediterranean climate, and you can grow so many things that you wouldn't even think that you could grow. In fact, one thing that I'm sort of pushing right now is sweet potatoes. No one seems to grow sweet potatoes, and they grow beautifully here. And you can not only eat the sweet potatoes, which are one of the wonder foods, but you can also eat sweet potato leaves cooked like spinach.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and they also are a pretty good protein source. Another really big protein source is cowpea leaves or black-eyed pea leaves, mm-hmm. as we know them more often. They have more protein than lots of other high-protein sources like different cheeses. They're incredible, more than the beans itself.
I'm going to make my daughter start eating these. I should be writing this down. Geneva, my daughter, is allergic to a number of protein sources, and she's a vegetarian. And so we have concerns and we have discussions.
There you go.
But clearly, these are exactly the sort of leaves that she should be finding on her plate at dinner time.
It could be. You have to be careful what you call it. I recommend calling them black-eyed pea leaves. I, at one point, had made a dish that incorporated these leaves. And as we were eating it, I was trying to see what it is. And I said, you know, I can taste the cowpea in here. Can you guys? And you should have seen their faces. They just, like were horrified. Like, oh, my God, she has gone over the bend. We knew it. And I was looking at them thinking, what is your problem? And it dawned on me. I said, no, the leaves.
P-E-A.
P-E-A, exactly.
Right. Okay, good. Well, I want to hear more about this. And recently on your blog, and let's point out to people where people can read more about this. It's thequarteracrefarm.com.
That's right, all one word.
Thequarteracrefarm.com, which is great because that's also the title of the book if you're looking for it at your local independent bookstore. And there you've got a number of wonderful representations of this experience post the publication of the book, but also a lot of great photographs, color photographs, very vibrant, that I bet would be too expensive to print throughout your book, and therefore you can put them on the blog for free and have people enjoy a sense of what your garden's doing now. So we're going to find out more about that. I'll also remind you that Kara Patton and Rachel Lagana are here, and they're going to talk to us about their projects as well. Everyone's got a project, whether it's spring cleaning, spring growing, or spring writing. I'm curious to know what yours are, listeners. Maybe I should say listener. But for right now, I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. We'll be right back.
Linux Users Group of Davis, or LUGOD, is a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting the Linux computer operating system and other open source products as an alternative to expensive, proprietary, and monopolistic software. LUGOD meets in Davis on the first Tuesday and third Monday of each month. For more information, visit LUGOD's website at lugod.org or contact Bill Kendrick at 530-759-1019. Or via email at root@lugod.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour on KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. This is our fundraiser recovery week. Thanks to all of you who helped us out last week as we raised well over $40,000 for your campus and community radio station. It was a lot of fun. In addition to all of the donors who called in during this show, and those who pledged afterwards with this show's name written onto the check, I'd also especially like to thank Chris Whitey Erickson, the Davis educator and performance poet who did a great job compelling all of you to help us out when we needed it most. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. I have a number of guests in the studio, but in the hot seat right now is Spring Warren. She's got a new book out called The Quarter Acre Farm, How I Kept the Patio, Lost the Lawn, and Fed My Family for a Year. Spring Warren, what was that year? You said you started in summer. Was it late summer? So was it like summer to summer, fall to fall?
It was July 1st, 2008 to July 1st, 2009, though it's ongoing. We still eat out of the
garden. I bet, because I've seen recent photographs. I know you didn't just pull everything up after the book was published. And tell me a little bit about that process. You probably had a lawn in the beginning of the process, and you had a tremendous and varied garden thereafter. Did you do all that labor yourself? Did you get help? Did you get help from your husband and or sons? Did you have to go to Ace Hardware and buy a lot of equipment? How did that work?
Well, I tried to do it all on the cheap, really.
Right.
And this is very much a family-focused endeavor. No matter how negative some people might have been at first, they were all very helpful. We did rip up the lawn, or actually ripped it up somewhat and covered it up otherwise. You know, did a lot of mulching. We had tools. We just used those. Lots of plants, you know, purchased plants and things like that. But for the most part, it's all on our own. In fact, we were having some TV crews come to the farm and a newspaper crew come to take photographs. And I was sort of thinking, I want it to look great. I want it to look great. And there was a couple of guys who do some gardening going around town, and they left a flyer. So I called them up. And I was like, okay, if I could just get them to just like weed, it'd be great. So I wouldn't have to do that myself. And they, by the time they showed up, I thought, I can't do this. I mean, that's the big thing. I'm always saying, I do it all myself. And so
right.
I had them weed the neighbors. It was like, no, okay. So it's, we do it all ourselves. And except for a real big push in the late spring when you're getting the summer crops in, mm-hmm. so to speak, and for a big push when you're pulling those out and putting the winter in, it actually is not so bad when you think about the time you put into a lawn, watering it and trimming it and mowing it, and the flowers and the shrubs and that sort of thing. It's really not a lot more work except for those two pivotal times of the season.
Right. I remember during those two pivotal times of the season, we're commemorating the 150th anniversary of the Civil War. I had an ancestor, several great-grandfathers back, who lived in Beavertown, Pennsylvania, where he and all those ancestors are now buried. And he was, I don't know if he was conscripted or a volunteer in the Union Army, but somehow he went AWOL in spring and fall for, like, harvesting, and then somehow got back to his unit and was never, you know, executed for desertion.
Well, people understood farming back then.
I guess so. there was a much larger percentage of the country's population, you know, were farmers. And so this is a story that I was told my entire life. It's interesting to hear those same sort of concerns with your quarter acre, where you know that there's going to have to be this intense push during this one particular time where it's all hands on deck.
Mm-hmm.
And probably much of the rest of the time, it's checking and pruning a little bit, but a lot of it is like picking and eating.
A lot of it's picking and eating, though in the summertime I do pick a lot and freeze or dehydrate or puree or whatever it is that
right.
I need to do, because we eat a lot of our kept food in the winter along with the winter garden.
Right. That makes sense. Tell me a little bit about the creatures that live in your garden.
They are terrible and wonderful indeed.
Yeah.
Some of them are useful, not so many. But we have two rabbits, and the rabbits are exceedingly useful, and people think that we eat them, but we do not eat our rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
We use our rabbits for little fertilizer machines, to put it nicely. In fact, rabbit manure is sort of wonder manure, and I think that if anybody's planning on getting a pet, that would be a great one if you sort of have this nexus of gardening and love to, you know, intersect. So two rabbits produce as much dry manure in a year as one steer.
Really?
That's dry manure. And it's great. You don't have to age it. You don't have to do anything to it. You could practically just hold the bunny over the garden and squeeze if you wanted to. And it's fantastic.
I had no idea. So rabbits do a great number of things quickly, including create manure.
Exactly. I recommend getting two females, by the way.
Okay. All right. So you've got the two rabbits.
Yes. We also have geese,
right.
Which is I do not recommend.
You don't recommend geese. Now, geese can be powerful watchdog-like creatures.
Yes, they will alert all of Gaul to right. the presence of intruders, yes. And that is the reason why we ended up with a goose. There's actually a goose in the Quarter Acre Farm that is one of the main characters in the farm, and his name is Gusteau.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, he died not very long ago. He had a very easy end. I found him with his head tucked under his wing.
Oh.
It was horribly sad. But they are incredibly loud animals. We have the best neighbors in the entire universe.
I was going to ask.
They're very good.
And are they very good mostly because you call workmen to come weed their lawns, as you did that one time? Do you know what I'm talking about? Remember, you got the flyer. And those people, they were going to come help you set up your garden for the newscasters.
You mean way back, like 5 minutes ago?
Exactly. Let's go back to that cool story. So, and I think I saw on Twitter, someone had talked about, I've been walking past this garden to get to work or school or what have you. For these years, and now look, she's got a book about it.
Really?
So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Did you see this?
I didn't see that.
I think I retweeted it, but I don't remember who it was now. So I'll send that to you if I can uncover that.
Right.
So your neighbors, I'm sure they were curious, and did they worry that you were crazy? That you took this like nice lawn and that you thought, I'm going to eat now off of what I create, what I grow right where my lawn was?
I think we have a pretty good neighborhood where people actually know each other.
Oh, okay.
And so they knew I was crazy.
All
so
right.
They, you know, weren't concerned about that. They just knew it and I wasn't dangerous.
So they said that figures.
That figures, that's
yeah.
Right. And otherwise, you know, I tried very hard to make sure that it wasn't an eyesore. That for me, the garden, I mean, that was one of the issues with my husband. He was so worried about not having this beautiful place to be.
Right.
And that it would just be this horrible-looking place. And for me, it needed to be a place to be as well as a place that would really produce a lot of things to eat. And the two actually go hand in hand because if you have a very, you know, sort of a garden that revolves on itself and works on itself, you know, there's a sort of a sustaining place, you're going to have a lot of flowers. You're going to have a lot of differences of landscape. It's not going to just be this totally arid place or colorless place except
right.
for the studs of chard or,
yeah.
you know, whatever it is. And so I have really worked hard to make it beautiful as well as being productive. And
the flowers bring the bees. Very important.
That's right. They bring the bees, and they also bring all sorts of beneficial insects who need flowers not only for when they don't have other insects to eat, but also to raise their young and to provide cover.
Right.
And it also alerts them. Flowers alert them to the presence of possible prey. And so if you have a lot of flowers in your garden, then you very likely have a lot of beneficial insects in your garden, and the more you have that going on, the less and less you're going to have to resort to all of those horrible practices like using pesticides or anything along those lines, which I don't recommend.
Especially if you're practically living in your garden, as you and your family do, because it's right there next to your house.
Exactly, and I am probably one of the world's laziest people.
Mm-hmm.
And so food that
I
requires...
I doubt that, but I'll just sit here politely. Go on.
But food, which requires nothing more than to pluck it off a vine and pop it in your mouth, that to me is the ultimate in eating.
Sure. It's interesting because you drove through this dystopic farm area to get to North Dakota, and here you've got this almost utopia of a yard now where you've got all these foods. They're just dropping into your hands. And it's also a place, is it a place where you and Lewis can write your books? Because your husband's also a writer.
Yes, yes, he is.
Can you write your books in the garden or the insects and the dropping fruits and vegetables?
It's
is
so
it too
loud.
Distracting?
It's so loud,
yeah.
it's funny, it's actually a very, very peaceful place, the yard, the farm. And as I said, I kept the patio. I not only kept one patio, but I kept three patios.
So you could entertain if you had to.
That's right. it's very, we have less than a quarter acre. That's our lot size is less than a quarter acre, but it didn't sound so good, the less than quarter acre farm.
Right.
But then you add the house footprint, the three patios, the whole area for the geese, the chickens, the rabbits, and lots of shrubbery that doesn't do anything, the driveway,
right.
The place to put the bicycles. So it's amazing how much you can grow on very small amount of land. I really recommend everybody, you know, give it a try at some point.
That's wonderful. Well, are there some DIY hints in the Quarter Acre Farm, your new book?
The Quarter Acre Farm is filled with do-it-yourself hints. I always laugh and I say that there's an arc not only to the book, but to every chapter, and which is broken up into topics like tomatoes or insects. And the arc of the book is that Spring tries to grow something, meets abject failure, and then has to figure out what in the world she's doing wrong.
Right.
And then through a lot of research into the natural history and the science and, you know, just product sort of information, I pretty much figured it out. It's still slightly embarrassing. I look over the fence at my neighbor's yard and I'll think, dang, their peas look better than mine. And they didn't even write a book. This
right.
is terrible.
That's funny. I guess you were highly motivated to make this work because you needed to eat.
Yes. And I say that the antagonism between my husband and I, that like, okay, I'll show you that, you know, it wasn't a good thing necessarily, but it also was the thing that made me sort of stubborn about the whole thing and say, well, oh, okay, I'm going to show you that I will. And I wrote everything I ate down for the year, which was the hardest part of the whole experience, by the way. And then I told everyone. And then, you know, if I hadn't done those two things, the month of zucchini might have been the end of it.
Right.
Because it was just like, oh, my God, how many more zucchini can I eat?
It could have been just a private, low-key failure that it would be like an inside joke in the family. But once you start writing things down, and especially after you tell everyone, then, you know, if you failed then, you have to go explain yourself over and over again
exactly.
to all your friends.
And,
and deal
with I told you so from the spouse for the
right.
rest of our lives. You know, that would be... That was not
Mm-mm.
something I could bear.
No. Now, you can say, yeah, I told you so.
Yeah, so
Look at the book.
He had a very, very nice thing that he said to someone. He said that she made me proud to be wrong.
Oh, that's nice. That's just what a husband is supposed to say. All right. Spring Warren is my guest, and we're talking about her brand new book. She'll be reading from it in a great number of places. Let's see if I remember. Tomorrow... Spring, you're going to, at 10 o'clock, with Jeffrey Callison, you're going to be on the Insight Show.
Yep.
On KXPR. And then, so that's tomorrow. Friday, you've got a reading at the Avid Reader. Does that start at 7:30 here in Davis?
That does start at 7:30.
At 7:30, right over there at 617 2nd Street, across the street from the Varsity Theater and the New Mishkas. And then Saturday... the people from Good Day Sacramento are going to come out and film you in your garden.
That's actually Friday.
That's Friday.
A doubleheader Friday.
Doubleheader Friday. Yeah. You'll have a busy Friday.
Mm-hmm.
What happens Saturday?
I guess I get ready for Sunday.
Sunday, you've got a really big event because that's over in Sacramento at the Avid Reader there. That's the one downtown. Is that right?
That's right.
And
no, that's at the Tower.
Oh, that's right. Over by the Tower Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And will you be bringing your son to that one?
Yes, he will be at both places, both events,
mm-hmm.
and he will be doing prints. And as I tell people, you know, if you get one of his prints, he is a fantastic artist. He's done work all over California, and these are limited edition prints, book plates, and it's well worth just showing up to get some of his work.
So you could make two investments. One in the book, very informative, well-written by an award-winning novelist. And then you could make a artistic/financial investment in a piece of art that would come with the book or that would be available for purchase. All right, great. Well, Spring Warren's going to stick around. I've got two more guests here to introduce you all to. And we also have to play some public service announcements. So stick around. My name is Dr. Andy, and In a few minutes, we'll have more of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Here's Ricardo Montalban.
There are many ways to measure success. For the Shriners, it's the nearly 700,000 children with orthopedic and burn problems that they've helped. This is Ricardo Montalban. For over 80 years, the Shriners have provided state-of-the-art medical care to kids all over North America, totally free of charge. There is a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. If you know a child that the Shriners might be able to help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Kindred Hospital, Sacramento, asks everyone to please give blood generously. By doing so, you may be saving a child, a surgical patient, or even an accident victim's life. And remember, blood donors protect their families as well. This important reminder is brought to you by Kindred Hospital, Sacramento in Folsom. More information is available online at kindredsacramento.org. On the air because they care about the health of this community. Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Make sure you stick around for the end of the show when we're going to be talking about the UC Davis lip dub. But for right now, I'd like to introduce you to Kara Patton. Kara Patton is a teacher at the Peregrine School who has earned her BA and multiple subject teaching credential, as well as her master's degree in education at UC Davis. She's had diverse experience working with children. As an undergraduate, she studied sociology with an emphasis in social services and African American studies with an emphasis in education inequity. It was through her coursework that she became interested in education, something that she sees as a powerful institution to bridge social inequity. Kara has begun, I believe, her teaching inquiry project. Did you start that last fall? She finished it last fall, and she's also curious to know about how poetry can also build communities within a classroom space and how students' participation may increase through this medium. She's also got some fun projects that she's working on for this summer. Kara Patton, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Andy.
Absolutely. Good to see you, Kara. So how long have you been working at the Peregrine School?
This is my first year, so, yeah, just year one.
And what ages or age do you teach?
I work with 4 to 6 year olds. My classroom's called Primaria, and we actually, it's kindergarten. So by the end of the 2-year cycle, they'll have completed kindergarten.
That's great. And where is the Peregrine School? Not everyone in Davis may know this.
Yeah, the Peregrine School is located in West Davis near Village Homes. It's off of Lake on Portage Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, right next to Arlington Farm, so it's kind of hidden away a bit.
A beautiful part of Davis. I know that the Village Homes brings a lot of people to Davis who are curious about some of the topics we were talking about in the first half hour, mm-hmm. gardens, interesting architecture, communal yards, this sort of thing. What distinguishes the Peregrine School from other nursery schools and kindergartens in Davis or in general?
I think Peregrine School is a very special place. I would like to say that in the last year, I feel like I've developed a greater sense of nature and earth in connection, and I've done that through the same play that my kids have done,
mm-hmm.
by playing in the dirt, by gardening. I've never gardened before, and then this is my first time really getting into it. And luckily, I work with another teacher, Susan Maxwell, who has a great sense of these things. She's a naturalist. So I've really been influenced by her, but also just by the kids' curiosity. When Spring was talking about pests, we have grubs, and it's been kind of an interesting thing at our school because the kids are, like, obsessed with these grubs. They'll dig, and they've even made grub factories, and they're a grub club, and it's just really exciting to see them getting in the dirt and moving stuff around and becoming really connected with their environment. And at a public school, which we are not, we're a private school, but a nonprofit one, the kids really get a deeper sense of themselves and I think with their environment.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, what sort of projects are you planning for this summer?
That's a great question. I'm actually launching a program called the Backyard Theater Group.
Mm-hmm.
I have a background in theater, so this is kind of my own special project. But what the emphasis is building a community, and through this community to build a play within 2 weeks. So there's two sessions. I could give you some details on that. The first session is 4 to 8-year-olds, and it's July 11th through the 22nd. And the second session is 9 through 13-year-olds, and it's July 25th through August 5th. So there's a lot of stuff about it, but I'm really excited to get the community beyond Peregrine School involved, and that's my hope and goal.
Excellent. If people wanted to find out more or ask about those dates again and the parameters for participation, how would they contact you or where would they go online?
You could contact me at Cara at Peregrine School. So it's C-A-R-A at peregrineschool.org.
That's great.
Yeah.
And folks, probably by now you know how to contact me if you have any questions for Cara and you don't remember all that. If you decided not to write that down while you were driving down I-80, I would gladly pass whatever messages you have for Cara Patton onto her. Now, I had mentioned something about poetry in your biography. Have you worked with poetry with kids at all as well? What sort of work have you done in the poetic sphere?
So when I was getting my teaching credential, we have to do this kind of a shorter study, and I studied how poetry can be a medium to bridge community within a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked specifically with English language learners who in Dixon. So what I saw was that, to preface it, we used Francisco Alarcón's mm-hmm. poetry, which is wonderful, bilingual poetry, and it was an opportunity for my English language learners to raise their hand and be able to, for the first time, some of them really had an opportunity to say, you know, help me translate the poetry. And I saw huge results and increase in participation there, and it inspired my master's work, which I haven't talked about in a while because it's been a few weeks now,
yeah.
So I kind of like, you know, haven't thought about it. But what I did there was how you can build community through a series of structured and unstructured cooperative activities.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to hearing more about that. Have you ever seen Francisco Alarcón read his work?
I have.
Isn't it magical?
It is. He has a great voice.
He does. He's a wonderful reader. I've had him on this radio show a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really a state treasure. So we're lucky to have him here in on campus mm-hmm. and often performing in and around the city of Davis, Sacramento, and its area.
I've been meaning to knock on his door because I know he's
yeah.
a professor here and just saying, like, you know, this is what I've done. I haven't done that yet, but I should go and talk to him and let him know.
You should.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, folks, this was Cara Patton. Cara, thanks so much for coming on the radio show to tell us about your work. We're going to take a quick musical break, and then when we return, we're going to hear about the Aggie TV Liptub. Probably wondering what a Liptub is. Well, we will tell you if you stick around. This is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Refuses to take care of it because his folks will probably give him a new one for his birthday. He can't see any reason for taking care of a heap of junk, even if he made it that way himself. He will in a moment, though. You see, he doesn't know it, but he'll find out that there's not a shred of a break left. Now, Philbert would be the first to agree that if it's worth riding, it's worth taking care of. Right? Right.
The Davis Bike Collective would like to remind you, take care of your bike, and it will take care of you. Drop by our shop at 4th and L Street in Davis to learn how. Open Saturdays, 12 to 6 p.m., and Wednesdays and Thursdays, 4 to 8 p.m. For more information, check out the Davis Bike Collective on daviswiki.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Now we're actually going to talk some technology and some new media. We're going to talk about this phenomenon known as the Liptub. But first, let me tell you who's here. Rachel Agana is here. She's a senior at UC Davis, a graduating senior, and co-director for the Aggie TV Liptub. She's also the online managing editor for Aggie TV. Linda Wolf is here. You may recognize her voice from her work at KDBS. She's a communications major and German minor. She's also a co-director and media relations assistant for Aggie TV.
Yes.
Say that again, Linda.
Thanks so much for having us.
Absolutely. I've just turned on your mic. So, Linda and Rachel, welcome to the program. So some of my hipper listeners, which is, of course, most of them, will know what a Liptub is. Nevertheless, why don't you all define it for us?
Sure. Rachel? A Liptub is basically like a music video, and it's kind of this phenomenon on YouTube where, like, hundreds of students, like, lip sync to a popular song, and it's typically shot all in one take. I think some schools have taken some liberties and like had cuts, yeah. But we are going to do it all in one take.
That's great. And so, and it's not a stationary thing, but the camera's actually moving, isn't it?
Right. So,
It's okay. We have a stabilizer that we'll be renting and using. We have a camera person running with it and people holding the music potentially. We're still in the works of figuring that one out. And we'll have choreography in different sections of the path. So as they're running, someone will pop out with a certain costume to a certain lyric in the song. And it's all time for certain doors to open and a certain musical moment. So we're really excited about it and are hoping that thousands of students will come out for this.
That's wonderful. Now, so with this, it's one of these videos that will give viewers not only a sense of the talents and the creativity of UC Davis students, but give viewers a chance to learn more about UC Davis and the campus as well.
Right. The song, we're doing a mashup of Queen's Bicycle Race and Don't Stop Me Now. So we've gotten Whimsical Bikes involved, and Aggie Pack will be there, and Unitrans, and so we're going to showcase all the great things that make up the Davis community.
Some fraternities, sororities, different student organizations that are eager to participate, just to show the diversity of our campus and hit up some of those iconic images that we have here.
That's great. Now, people who are listening to the show, can they participate? Can they watch? What can they do?
Yes. Okay. the day of the Lip Dub, we're having a registration table by the Memorial Union building. If people just want to come that day, and we can place them. But for people that would like to be featured in it more.
Let's just remind folks, that's this coming Saturday, April 30th, and at 10 a.m.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
Yes, and then if people want to make sure that they're featured in it, they have specific plans that they have in mind, we would like them to come to our rehearsal the day before at 3 p.m. in the same place, so that we can practice too. We'll have some of those organizations already out there, and then we'll, the day of the Lip Dub, we'll line the path that we're taking with people and to cheer, and then at the end we're going to have a scissor lift raise up the camera in the quad to give that overview of everyone that participated in the Lip Dub. So once they're done with their part, they'll run over to the quad, and hopefully there'll be hundreds, maybe thousands of people there cheering for the end of the video.
That's wonderful. And tell me again the actual time that this will take place. Do we know?
Yeah, so the actual day of filming is Saturday, and we'll be starting at 10 a.m. And I think the actual filming won't be till like 11, 12, but we want everyone to be settled in their places. And since we're doing it in one take, the whole take is like about 6 minutes. So we're just going to do it like multiple times to get all the timing right.
What we're doing also to entertain the crowd while they wait is we're having KDVS DJ for
Excellent.
Us. So people can be entertained with that. And we're having some businesses donate some giveaways, like gift baskets, and we'll have some contests for people to win some things.
Yeah. That's great.
And in the morning, like Noah's Bagels donated bagels, and Pete's Coffee will have coffee
for those early birds.
Excellent. And early birds, you only need be there as early as 10 a.m.
Yes.
On the 30th. And is that over at the MU?
Yeah, the MU quad. You'll see our giant tent to direct people.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like it's going to be very exciting. How soon will you folks over at Aggie TV know that if you got the right take? Pretty much you're going to have to work with one of those takes, no matter how right or flawed it is, right?
Right. We're hoping, we're hoping to finish by 3 p.m., and that's, like, we gave ourselves, like, a lot of cushion time just in case, like, lots of things to orchestrate, lots of people.
Well, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I hope that you get a huge turnout this Saturday. It'll be one of those things where if you are in the city of Davis, if you're a student or a staff member or even a stodgy faculty member at UC Davis, you should check this out, I think, because it's one of those things that's going to be a little sliver of history that will be preserved forevermore for those of you who would like to view it over and over again in the future. It'll be available at the Aggie TV website, no doubt. Right. And where else?
We'll be posting it on our Facebook page. You can just find us, Aggie TV. And, yeah, our website is aggietv.org.
It'll be on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
And it'll be on YouTube as well. Wonderful. Well, thanks very much to Rachel Agana and Linda Wolf for coming to tell us about the Aggie TV Lip Dub. Should be a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, folks, we are going to share just a little bit of jazz with you, and then it's going to be time for me to read our final messages and then bid you adieu. So stick around. My name is Dr. Randy, and this is Dr. Randy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thank you.
Studio and Fashion Show, Saturday, May 7th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 79 New Montgomery Street, San Francisco. This is an opportunity to explore hands-on studios in 17 areas of art and design. Experience a live runway fashion show featuring the latest collections from fashion graduates at 2 p.m. Dress to impress and enter the best style contest. Observe students producing live interviews. Meet with admissions representatives and more. Saturday, May 7th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at 79 New Montgomery Street. More information at 800-544-2787 or visit academyart.edu.
I'd like to thank everyone who appeared on my radio show this afternoon. Spring Warren was here for the first half hour, and we talked about her brand new book, The Quarter Acre Farm, How I Kept the Patio, Lost the Lawn, and Fed My Family for a Year. The Quarter Acre Farm is a brand new book that will be featured at the Avid Reader this coming Friday at 7:30. That's at 617 2nd Street, across the street from the Varsity Theater. We also heard from Kara Patton, one of the star teachers at the Peregrine School. She's working on a bunch of theatrical, child-based projects that your children may want to participate in. That's this coming summer. If you want to reach Kara Patton, you can drop me an email, aojones@gmail.com. And then also I'd like to thank Rachel Lagana and Linda Wolf, representing the Aggie TV Lip Dub that happens this coming Saturday. If you are hip and cool, you're probably going to play a part in that. Hope you'll stick around for some great music that is on tap. And I'll be back here next week for another edition of Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Bye-bye.